On this special episode of College Crosscast, Ryan's worst result of Schadenfreude has erupted as Philadelphia has officially taken over Philadelphia, the United States, and this website. We're going to talk lacrosse. We're going to do that because you're all expecting lacrosse, but for the most part, we're going to talk about Philadelphia and the Birds. I'm Chris Ostremski.
Hey, folks. How you doing? It's Safe Fakadu.
And this is College Crosscast. Today, we start a new chapter in the history of planet Earth. Today marks the end of a dynasty and the beginning of an underdog. Folks, the Philadelphia Eagles are Super Bowl champions. To the dislike of Ryan, to the pure dislike of Jake, and to the likeness of Syracuse lacrosse fans who don't like Hopkins and Bill Belichick. We did it. We have done it. I'm Chris Ostremski, along with Safe, for a special edition. We're going to talk about lacrosse, and we'll probably do that first. It'll be a short little thing because we have a crosscast that'll be up on Wednesday. But we will also talk a lot about this special once-in-a-lifetime event. It's more important than Halley's Comet, more important than a solar eclipse. It's a Philadelphia Eagles Super Bowl victory. Safe, how are you feeling?
Chris, I feel wonderful. I feel blessed that I got to be on the Across College Lacrosse podcast. That's for sure.
Well, it is. It's a college crosscast. I thought we just discussed that.
I was trying to pull them all together into one, but I definitely before we get started, loving the show, loving everything you've done over here at Across College Lacrosse. But I just feel blessed to be a guest. Let's put that out there first. But it's wonderful. It's a good day to be an American. I mean, it's rare that one team can both save a game and a country all at the same time. But we did it. I'm happy that we finally saw that. I remember less than 2 years ago, we asked everyone at the Philly Final Four, which is coming back within a year and a half, if they thought they were going to all the Philly lacrosse
Philly
players.
Guys, yeah.
We asked them, did they think they're going to see a championship within their lifetime? And look at that, we delivered within 2 years. So it's been great, Chris.
It's unbelievable, and the fact that we are talking about it right now is even more unbelievable. We'll get into the game. We want to talk a little bit about college lacrosse. We'll do more in the bigger crosscast you'll hear on Wednesday. But some interesting results over the weekend. Lehigh, North Carolina, Vermont, Villanova in overtime, BU in overtime, also Bucknell, Rutgers, Bryant, Duke, Ohio State, and by God, that's Jacksonville's music. Big winners on the weekend. Safe, any initial thoughts on the weekend?
I thought it was, I wish we could have saw the Villanova Penn State game, because I think about it, I'm sure I get a feeling Villanova, Penn State would have loved to have just turned this into the scrimmage that instead of one of their first games of the season. But I think the biggest story of that one was just the news of Grant Amen not being in a boot and not playing in the game on Saturday. I think Penn State obviously was able to score points, and a lot of the loss could have been blamed on the fact that they kind of had a meltdown defensively in the fourth quarter. But you got a credit to Villanova. Maybe it was the bump of having their coach on your show, but they they that's going to be a big win towards the end of the season, because in terms of, you know, if Penn State bounces back and, you know, they should just be a strong team because when they start playing their big schedule. But I think, you know, we were talking about it on the big show when we were reviewing the Big Ten. We're like, Penn State is going to be good this year, but we didn't think their non-conference schedule was that challenging, except for games like Villanova and maybe one other non-con. But like, if they lost one of their early non-conference games, it could come back to catch them later in the season in Big Ten play. So, yeah, this is one thing we were worried about, and it actually happened. So, not a great way to start the season for the Nittany Lions.
I thought Penn State started out very strong. I mean, I was just watching stats, and I saw a little bit of the game because I have the power to. 7 goals in the third quarter for Penn State, and I thought, you know, they're clicking. And all of a sudden, Villanova, their underdogs, come back with a 7-goal quarter of their own, force it in overtime. Clue wins it. This could be a good Villanova team. I thought maybe Penn State would have won if Ament was playing. The question I have is there a goalie controversy with Penn State again? Because we had last year, Will Schreiner got pulled for Colby Knies. Knies started the rest of the way. This year, Knies struggled, and Will Schreiner finished the game. But I don't know if Will Schreiner was that strong. So I think they need a solid goalie somewhere. I don't know if Knies is the answer. I'm not sure if Schreiner's going to start for Hobart, what the deal is for that. But Villanova's a good team. I still think Knies should get the initial start for Hobart next Saturday. But, you know, we'll have to just wait and see. The other game that I want to bring up is BU Providence. Shout out Marissa. 12-11 final there for BU. Second straight year, that BU beats Providence in overtime. We were both watching this game, Safe, and I don't know if you liked any specific player. I like Chris Gray for BU. 2 goals, 3 assists in his first game as a rookie. John McLean had 4 goals in the game winner. Anyone else stand out to you for this game?
I mean, it's tough to say this because it was a loss, but Sean Leahy mm-hmm. from Providence had a stellar game. 5 goals, I believe 4 of them came in the first half. Really helped Providence explode in a big way in that second quarter when it looked like they were going to, take pretty much control of the game. They went into halftime with a 9-7 lead, but you know they really unloaded on BU in the second. BU came back with a few of their own to make it a little bit close and get 7 goals for the half. But I thought Providence, you know, was looking pretty much in control. They were pretty much leading the game until Ryan Hilburn buried one with 7 seconds left in the fourth quarter. So just, you know, another kind of a meltdown for a team that seemed to be kind of in control. BU scores over the course of 2 quarters, 5 of the last 6 goals. But if Providence could have just found one way to withstand that last 10 seconds, you know, that would have just been like a, you know, one of those scares, but you come out of there with a win. So it was kind of a tough way for the Friars to start the season 2 years in a row. They lost in overtime to BU last year as well. So it was just, you know, I think it's a tough game for them. You know, credit to the Terriers. John McLean obviously had his 4 goals, but James Burr also finished with 4 points, 2 goals and 2 assists. Hilburn, as I said, who scored the equalizer with 7 seconds, he had a couple goals. So nice to see the, you know, if you're a BU fan, that they were able to spread out the scoring as opposed to Providence, who got that big 5 out of Sean. But you know, it was an entertaining game. Just BU found a way to win, just kind of similar to the way they did last year.
Let's not forget, Providence lost the first game of the season to BU, and they finished as Big East runner-ups to Marquette by a goal. So just because they lose this game doesn't mean their season's over. Doesn't mean anyone's season's over. Penn State could still win the national championship. But 2 good games in overtime, and they finished in overtime, so got Whitney early. Anything else that you want to bring up from the other games that you caught your eye throughout the weekend? You know, Rutgers won by 4, which is a little bit of a surprise. Bucknell won by 2. They had their goalie goal there. And then Jacksonville beating Navy by 5.
I kind of thought that Rutgers Robert Morris game was one of the more interesting ones of the afternoon. Robert Morris, you know, pretty much equaled them all three of the four quarters. The Rutgers had a big second quarter with they went on a 4-0 run there to go into halftime with a 7-3 lead. But Robert Morris, you know, wasn't backing down. They actually, a few, you know, when we were talking about the game before in our podcast last week, you know, we said that they, you know, could pose a challenge. Holding that Rutgers team to, you know, only 11 goals, that's kind of a pretty good accomplishment. I know you would like to get the win, more importantly, but that this is a Colonial team that had, I believe it was 7 different guys score. No one had a multiple goal game, but I thought they showed a lot of heart coming into Rutgers' first game of the season for them, and you know, playing one team that's predicted by many to be you know, at least a top 5, top 7 team throughout much of the season, holding them to only 11 goals, you know, a lot of that had to happen because of a big second quarter. I think that's a good sign going ahead. Max Edelman, I thought he played a really good game, holding Colonials 7 goals for Rutgers, and he had 5 saves. And Kieran Mullins, who I have on my team, actually ended up with 0 points today. But Jules Henningberg picked up the slack with 6, getting 5 assists and a goal. And Christian Trazzoli getting 3 goals also helped Rutgers in a big way. Shout out to also Kristen Mazzone with 2 goals, 2 assists game. So I think if you're a Rutgers fan, I think you're just happy to get a win, you know, first game of the season. I think if you're a Colonial fan, they get some things that are encouraging from this game, you know, at least from the defense. If you could have bottled up Jules a little bit better, you know, who knows how this game would have ended. So, you know, I think there's a lot of good things for both teams to take out of this game.
I'm going to look at 2 games in particular, and they both revolve around face-off guys in North Carolina schools. I'm going to start with Duke Air Force, which was a blowout 18-4, but Brian Smith didn't have the best of these. I think he only won 6 faceoffs, but Trent Harper really outgunned him, so I'm not sure if that's a sign to come. And I mentioned that Duke's faceoff guy, Kyle Rowe, graduated, so we had no clue who was going to be their main faceoff guy. Is Brian going to be the top guy? Is there a guy better that Duke might have? Because they have Denver in about 2 weeks. They have Jacksonville next week, and they're facing a guy in Hunter Forbes who went 19 of 22 against Navy. How about Trevor Baptiste in 2 weeks? He's just going to demolish them. So they need to find some way to get the face-off battle more toward their side. And then the second one, which I thought was a kind of a stunner, not really, I mean, they covered the imaginary lacrosse Vegas lines, but Lafayette losing to North Carolina 17-10. Riley Graham and Charles Kelly didn't do so hot against Lafayette's faceoff guys, and it was kind of tight a little bit. It was a 3-4 goal margin in the fourth quarter, even though maybe it was already out of hands, but Lafayette stuck around, so I'm not sure if North Carolina is still ironing out the kinks. Timmy Kelly, Tanner Cook, Chris Cloutier are always good players, but is Lafayette going to be something worth reckoning? We'll have to find out. With that, any player of the week that you have from the weekend?
But before we get the player of the week, I just want to say I agree with you on Lafayette in North Carolina. Were you surprised at how Lafayette was able to stick with the Tar Heels for the first half, or were you more impressed with North Carolina shifting it into another gear and then winning pretty handedly?
I think I was more impressed with just Lafayette staying in it. Just looking at some of these stats, Lafayette had 15 shots in the second quarter. So I feel like, and then 17 in the fourth, and I think that's when North Carolina started to take the gas off the pedal. I was a little bit more impressed, and I know like there's still some problems that Lafayette has, and North Carolina has some problems too, but 19 of 31 for the faceoff extra Lafayette against 12 of 31 for UNC. But the big thing is for Lafayette is they were just 12 of 21 on clears. So North Carolina rode the Leopards very, very hard in this game. But, you know, there might be some signs that North Carolina has some kind of problem, that their offense is always going to be good.
Yeah, I agree. I think Lafayette played they did a good job of that, not letting that game get out of hand in the first half, because North Carolina was able to move back and forth. They did a good job with their faceoff. Just a couple times they weren't able to come out with any points in that, and then North Carolina, you just can't do that with that. You know, when there's that big of a talent disparity, when you have your chances, you got to bury them or somehow control the game. But yeah, I agree with you. I thought North Carolina did a good job of switching it up into the second half and then pulling away. I mean, I think it's easy to go Justin Gutterding. How do you not get it for 10 points? And I was trying to, you know, make a way in my mind for John McClain to get it, but I think Justin was quite impressive in his first game of the season. Air Force was a little bit understaffed, and I think that probably had something to do with it. Brandon Jones didn't play at all, right? Because I know you and I were talking about that, and he's a big point. He's a big piece of Air Force's defense. So credit to Duke had no mercy, and they took advantage of it. So that's exactly what I do. But so I'm going to go with Justin. I would make a strong case for John McClain. Otherwise, you know, just because such a great game and such a against a team that was quite capable in Providence. But yeah, you got to go with Justin. There's no way you can't from this weekend, you know.
So I already said my three stars from the Across College Across episode. I'll rehash them here. It's Cuccinello from Villanova, my third star, Christian Cuccinello from Villanova. Second star was Will Saints from Bucknell, who had 2 goals and 6 assists. And then, obviously, the first star starting his Jordan year, he's 23 on Saturday, with a 3 goals, 7 assists performance, is none other than should-be Towerton finalist Justin Gutterding. So, we thank you for listening to this lacrosse portion of the Crosscast, and let's get to the actual reason why we're here.
Let's get to the Philly portion.
Let's get to the Eagles, baby. Nick Foles, baby. He's it. He's our baby.
Great. This is wonderful.
If you live under a rock, which I don't think any of you do, there was a Super Bowl football game last night at 6:30, and I believe we are now entering the ending portion. It's 8:30 when we're recording it, the end portion of Justin Timberlake's halftime show, which I did not watch. I was actually at a bar at a Syracuse, and they didn't really have the volume all the way up for that or any of the entire game, so I couldn't hear what was going on, which is good. Where did you watch, by the way? Chickies?
I went early to Chickies to just grab some food. Went to the Philly Art Museum steps early in the morning, went running, saw a bunch of people there, and then went all the way down to Chickies, grabbed some food for me and my buddy Joe. We watched pretty much, I want to say, like 15 games this season at his spot, and I think we're 14-1, including the playoffs. The only game that we watched together and they lost was Cowboys.
A game that doesn't really matter. So you're exactly.
So we counted that as a win in our mind, you know. But yeah, no, I just watched it with him, and because we live like right off of Broad Street, it was just prime location. But you know, because we're right on Pine and Spruce area and Broad, so right in Center City. Which bar did you watch it in Syracuse?
I watched it at Lucy's. They call it Orange Crate now, right on Marshall Street. It was us, me, and pretty much the men's and women's lacrosse team. And I was actually the only one that was actually kind of watching the game. I was pretty much staying in my, like, there's like a little corner of like one of like the ledges where people would eat. And I was just staying there the entire game, and I was just pushing people out of my way, because later on in the second half, it was more people just socializing, wanted to drink, and not really caring about the game, because most of them weren't even Eagle or Patriot fans, or they were fake Eagle and Patriot fans. I lost my my viewing buddy in the first half because he was trying to get with a girl, so, and he actually left in the middle of the fourth quarter. I don't know why he did that, but so.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is he a Philly? Is he from Philly?
He's from North Jersey, so that might be why he's not a true fan.
That's probably just a fan.
I think I was the only one that was from Philly that watched the game at Lucy's, so I feel proud of that. But yeah, I mean, unbelievable game. 41-33, the Birds, for the first time in the history of human civilization, are Super Bowl champions. That just sounds weird. It's been over a day since, or actually under a day, since the thing happened. And it's still crazy. It's still crazy that we have Nick Foles, our baby, 28-43 for 373, three touchdowns, one interception. That wasn't really his fault. And, oh, by the way, he caught a touchdown pass.
Alshon would have caught that.
He would have caught that.
He had it, like, kind of secure. If the other guy didn't knock it out.
If he didn't bobble it, it would have been maybe a catch or a complete pass. Yeah. And I don't care about that.
No. I meant like on New England.
That was a good air punt, though.
All right, that's exactly what I said. I was like, it's a punt. It's pretty much a punt to my buddy. And then
yeah.
And then Foles coming through with the catch.
Right after Brady dropped the ball or couldn't catch it. That was great, too.
All I was thinking was Giselle, you remember, she screamed, like, my husband cannot throw and catch the ball at the same time. And I was like, well, you know, get you a man that can do both.
Nick Foles outdueled Tom Brady in Super Bowl 52.
Well, were you surprised? I wasn't. Nick can do this. Like, he obviously didn't do it in St. Louis, but that's
Jeff Fisher kills quarterbacks.
Exactly. So. That's what happens if you have Jeff Fisher as your quarterback. Nick Foles, Mr. 27-2, like, can ball. And I get it that, you know, he had an unfortunate exit from Philly. Shout out Chip Kelly. We saw, like, you know, it wasn't like he just came in and this is like Varsity Blues and he's Moxon coming off the bench and never played before. Like, you know, we've gone to the playoffs with Nick before. You know, he was 8-0 in that second season before getting hurt. As long as it's not like freezing cold, Nick can ball, and he was amazing. I never felt like worried when he was on off. You know, if anything, I was just like, let's just get the ball back to the offense. You know, I was thinking, and I wanted us to run the ball. I was just like, just run the ball, kill the clock. But a couple of those third downs when they passed, like, you know, they were obviously the right call. So with the result, but like, I definitely was like, run the ball. I had some Skittles on the game, Chris. First time ever. Nice. Seriously,
good for you.
I think
after the first drive that I was a little bit nervous about, you know, Nick Foles doing what he can do, and then just being able to see what Nick Foles was able to do and drive the team down for three, I felt a lot confident that, you know, he can do this. And, you know, you are right. Shout out to Chip Kelly for the RPOs, because before the RPOs, Nick Foles was a different quarterback and one that was struggling. And then with the RPOs, he's like a god, a titan, who's going to have a statue built for him in about a week. I mean, it's an unbelievable transformation that Foles was able to do from losing our baby Carson Wentz to a torn ACL. By the way, still the only quarterback that threw a touchdown on a torn ACL. Did Tom Brady do that? No. And then Nick Foles leading the Eagles to a field goal in LA against the Rams to help them win that started to be a sign. And then the Giants game, and then
the big Giants game. Yeah.
He struggled with the Raiders and he struggled with the Cowboys. And all of a sudden we have to find out what works for Nick Foles and the RPOs. And it started to work with Atlanta late in that game. And then he started firing against Minnesota. And then he does it again. We only had to punt once in that game, which was unbelievable. They didn't have to punt at all, but you know.
Well, you convinced me, Chris. Let's trade Carson for the first and fourth, for Cleveland's first and fourth.
Whoa, hold on.
Let's go.
It's too early for that. We I don't want to even think about trades. I just want to enjoy the win. Enjoy the win.
Do you think Carson can just, like, let us ride next season? Like, we can just tell him, like, listen, dude, you're the quarterback, but let's just get you fully healthy. Let's like, not even let you even think of getting on the field.
I think he's going to be fully healthy before the season starts.
He was hurt in week 12, week 13.
Yeah, but he was also throwing a football 30 yards before Super Bowl.
I know, like, ACLs are, like, you know.
He's a man. He's a machine.
Yeah, ACLs are not only a great acronym for a wonderful podcast, but I know that science has made a lot of leaps and bounds in ACL surgery and stuff like that, and people are like right back at it. But like, how about we just take some time, you know? Let Howie do some of his dark magic, put out a little balloon, you know, maybe there was not a setback, but just like, we're just taking our time, just a trial balloon, and everyone's going to be cool with it because we just won a Super Bowl, and let's just like let Nick start next year. Like, how do you not let him start, right?
If Carson's healthy, you start him.
Period.
But let's just stop this talk because – we can worry about that after the parade and after the combine and after the draft or whatever, after March 14th.
Well, all right. So first off, let's do the thing. Also, you're right. Let's not. But I, speaking of dark clouds, like I just want to give a special shout out to Jake's staunch and pure anti-Philly dislike. A lot of people do that. Do it for retweets and likes. Jake genuinely doesn't like Philly fans. So. We give him a shout out. Shout out also to Lord Belichick. None of this was his fault.
I got the signal, and I'm happy that it was his fault.
Says you shut your mouth.
Sitting Malcolm Butler.
You shut beautiful. Your beautiful. Mouth. Lord Belichick. I got the orders. All blames on Brady. I was going to ask you, what was did you watch the news? Did you get your parents like a Comcast account to watch the local news? I just only ask because like you're in Syracuse, you know.
I mean, Six ABC was everyone was streaming on their website, so I just watched there. I was watching Six a lot and 10. 3 was crap, but I was watching more of Six and Ten for the first hour and a half of the celebrations. They were crazy. The car being turned over, which was a beautiful sight, even though I feel bad for the owner of the car.
Oh, I didn't. I thought I didn't know anyone tipped their cars over. We literally, as soon as there was a part of me that was like, Chris, I had like little bit of a heart attack when that ball was in the air because I was just like, crap, Gronk's gonna catch this. And then we're going to go to overtime, you know. And then when I saw it bouncing around, I saw Hogan right there. And I was just like, Chris Hogan's going to catch the deflection. You know what I mean? Like, we're going to go, you know. I just couldn't believe it. And then when it hit the ground, we just went, booked it right downstairs, ran down his steps, ran right to Broad Street. It was great. It was absolutely – I mean, we had a great experience 2 weeks ago against the Vikings, but this was on another level. I've been in Philly for the Pope when he was here in town, and they like, you know, they kind of just shut down the city.
The city on Thursday.
But only reason I mentioned the Pope thing is like on the Sunday after the big mass and everybody was leaving, like that was nuts. There was just people everywhere. It was just a whole sea of people on Broad Street, and I felt just like on the Broad Street section, it was more people than that time with the Pope. You know, and there was hundreds of thousands of people in Philly. But streaming was much more orderly last night, which is literally I think you tweeted out that picture or retweeted it. The one guy who took the aerial shot of Broad, I guess, from the corner of the Chestnut and Broad. It got the whole look at the six blocks. It was just like filled wall to wall, or not wall, but you know, like sidewalk to sidewalk with people. It was amazing. Fireworks were going everywhere. I put up a few videos for this post for us, but I talked to my buddy. I was like, this is getting a little too lit. And then like everyone was pretty good against the Vikings. I'm not getting on to the polls, but there was it all shut down. People were climbing up that fence or the gate area right on City Hall. That's it was reminiscent. It felt like, you know, those scenes of, like, you know, when the zombie apocalypse first starts and everyone's like in World War Z. It was World War Z because World War Z was in Philly. You know, where it started. You may know, you didn't watch it, but it was similar to that. Like, you just, like, you're walking, you're running around, and there's something's happened to your right. And there's like another thing to your left, and it was great. But it was, you know, it was heavy revelry. It wasn't any rioting. No one's gonna riot in Center City, Philly. You know,
a lot of people
did. It's just too much. Not on Broad Street, Center, you know, like Midtown Village area. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's just too much money in that area. Like, obviously, some of the awnings fell and they got damaged. But you know what I mean? That's not like people are like worried about like windows getting broken. I was like, relax. No, nothing like that's gonna happen, right? There's too many cops, so.
Was there any part in the game when you knew, like, the Eagles were going to win the Super Bowl? Because I didn't think that they were going to, I thought that maybe the fumble was, like, I kind of started to feel like, you know, we're going to win this thing, but I also was, like, really hesitant to say we're going to win this thing until that final drop at the end.
I felt we were going to win the whole time. Like, I was going into the game, I was like, points or money line. I was like, I'm just using the money line. I was like, the Eagles are going to win the game. And I just thought they couldn't stop our offense. It's, you know, when it's nice outside, Nick is very nice. And since it was playing indoors, I didn't have any problems. I thought they was going to have a great game. I was concerned with, like, you got to just knock them out or, you know, step on their throat, because you can't go, like, my buddy Joe, shout out Joe, and I, when we were watching, like, and Brady got the strip sack, like, they showed Lurie, and Lurie was pretty much, he's like, calm down, Eric, because he was exactly right. Like, unless we had scored a touchdown there, the Patriots were still only going to be down 8, which was the winning margin that I said was going to be on the podcast last week. Shout out myself. You can't give them any shot. Like, Tom Brady is a predator. You know, like a shark. He's just like Jordan. Like, you can't give them any opportunity to come back in a game, because for most times, they're going to able to do that. And they kind of showed it last night. Like, they didn't have one punt. I think they barely had any penalties. Like, they don't hurt themselves.
They only had one penalty, I believe.
Yeah, and it was a false start, right, by one of their – I think it was their it was on Kronk. I remember he, like, jumped up. It was like that was the only penalty on them. They don't hurt themselves.
One penalty for 5 yards. Eagles at 6 for 35.
Yeah, they don't hurt themselves. And but I was like, once – it didn't really, like – I didn't really, like, know for sure we were going to – you know, I didn't, like, give myself I wasn't vulnerable until, like, the ball hit the ground on the Hail Mary, because I was just like, even when they were, like, fourth down, I was like, oh, we got Brady. They converted that first down just to put them within, you know, shooting distance of the end zone. So just, like, you can't, you know, they're an excellent team, and shout out to Marissa, you know, I'm just happy the Eagles won. But, like, I wasn't, like, really comfortable until the ball hit the ground.
Oh, yeah.
At the very end,
I thought that there were points where I'm like, this could happen. Like, obviously, the Philly special was something like, this could happen. The Ertz touchdown, that was, I think, a little scary for me, because I'm like, I'm thinking we gave him too much time again with 2.5 minutes, and there was plenty of time for him. He probably was going to milk it. And then the second play, you have Brandon Graham, and that was like, I think we're going to do it. Now, after the 2-minute warning, you had LeGarrette Blount, third down and short. Blount was running the ball, and he got stuffed. I'm like, would have loved it to see that. If he got the first down, that would have been it. But as I'm wearing this right now, in hour 27 plus, I've slept in what I've been wearing since Super Bowl Sunday. Jake Elliott, our baby, hitting a 46-yard field goal. And I said, I kind of said that Jake Elliott would win the game for the Eagles, and guess what? He kind of didn't really win the game, but he also kind of did win the game.
He's done that before, where he's missed an extra point and he came up huge. I forget what game it was.
Giants.
Giants,
dude.
I was thinking, man. I was like,
he missed a field goal too. He missed a field goal, and then he made it up with the field goal, 61-yarder, which I was at that game. And that's why I have that jersey. But I think he might have done it again too. But I'm not totally sure about that. Lions? No, I think might have been the Rams. Might have been the Rams game.
That probably that one seems more like because I think didn't we only win that by three or we had defense stand there, but
yeah, we won by ten. Well, nine.
Yeah. 10. Because yeah, we got the fumble, but I always felt like I felt good throughout the entire game in terms of the in the first half because I was like, the Patriots were only in the game because of like trick plays and like I was
they
like
they were trick plays for them.
Yeah, they were. Oh, like a bunch of fakes, like that. That you know, they were trying to like throw it to Brady in the first.
Plays. More fakes. Dude, that's the trick play was the Brady drop. That was a trick play.
That was a trick play. That's my point. Like that.
It was incomplete.
But my point was just like they had to go into their bag of tricks like early. You know what I mean? Like Doug went for the Philly special like on fourth down. Like it was just before the end of the half. Like
fourth and one.
Like he chose to do it. Like
yeah,
to me, it felt like he chose to do that. You know, he's like, we can catch him by surprise. Like it felt like the Patriots, like they were only getting down the field in big chunks in the first half, like on like dubious third down conversions, or like you know where they faked it four times on a play and the, you know. Two double fake reverse. You know, it was just like, all right, we got it. You know, but like to me, I was just like, it looked a little desperate. Like it was just like they looked a little weak offensively in the first half. Like Brady was off. Like he was just underthrowing people, and I felt like we could have gone into half up 21-3. But you know, they got that touchdown off of was it Burkhead? He had like big run, got him all the way down there.
Yeah, Burkhead had a big run.
So that's my point. It's just like I wasn't like it wasn't like they were just demolishing us and moving up and down the field. Like, yeah, well, it was like a lot of it was just like they somehow converted on third down, have one big play. Darby was like Jalen Mills was trying to kill me at certain points in the game. They were picking on him, but each time like Nick answered like that's how I felt. It's just like I was like we're gonna score 40 points today. Patriots, like, let's see what you can do. Can you score that many? And they weren't able to.
There was another point that you mentioned with like the defense and defensive backs that I brought up when I was calling Big Daddy Graham on Sports Radio 94 WIP. It was it was really familiar because. The night before, Brian Dawkins got in the Hall of Fame, and one of his things he's known for was his big hit against Algie Crumpler in the 04 NFC title game. Malcolm's hit on Brandon Cooks in the second quarter that got him concussed and out of the game. I felt like that was and that was his only catch, too. He caught it for 23 yards, and then he got clobbered by Jenkins. It was a legal hit, even though it was, I think, helmet to helmet, but it was deemed a runner. And he wasn't defenseless. He made football moves. I felt like that set the mood for what would come. And I had a feeling that was another point where I saw that, you know, this is where we're going to win this game. And that set the mood. And that, I think, played a big role in the team's eventual win.
That was like a movie hit. That's like a hit that, like, is elite. You know, like, something that they, like, warn you about and, like, Pee Wee football where they tell you like keep your head on a swivel. Like that was football at its most brutal. Like it was just it was a legal hit, you know. Chris just wasn't looking, and I'm happy he was able to get up. But I thought when Doc got it, the call for the Hall, like I was like, that's a wonderful sign. And then T.O. Yes. as well, so I was like, oh, that's two Eagles. That's
Eagles. T.O. It's more of Doc.
No, for sure. But you know, I was just like, all right, let's go. It's gonna happen. What do you feel about the play calling? Because like, it seemed like Michaels and Collinsworth, who are two pros, and I usually like listening to Michaels a lot. He's funny. He always knows what's going on with the lines and everything. But I was just like, on the two reviews, like they were just so they were begging, absolutely begging for it to be called back. Maybe they were just had so many bad experiences where they thought something was a catch, and then it doesn't look good to you know, when they overturn it. So maybe they're just like being preemptively pessimistic just because they, you know, just to be on the safe side. But I thought both of those were just obviously like they should have gone for the Eagles on review. I don't know how you felt about that.
Well, I didn't hear. I couldn't really hear their commentary, so I have to pass on that question. So I'm guessing it was really good that I didn't listen to them because they sucked. So
I thought maybe it was one of those bars who had the live play-by-play instead of music. But
no, they had the live play-by-play, but it was barely on and no one could. They actually midway through, right after the Patriots scored, and right before the right during the beginning of the Eagles drive, that they lost the feed on the DirecTV. They lost the DirecTV feed for some reason. And we're like struggling, like, what just happened? It's not even snowing outside. It's all clear. And then none of the TVs worked. So I pulled out my phone, watched like the first half of the Eagles drive. And I think the Ertz fourth down, which by the way, that was a big play. That Ertz on fourth down and one completion or whatever that was, fourth and short completion. That was a huge play. That was probably one of the plays of the game. By far,
I was going nuts. I was just like, "Why don't we run it? Run it? Just do what you know. Do what Brady does, and just bulldoze your way for first."
But I think right after that, that's when the TVs came back on, and I was able to see the Ertz touchdown. But yeah, I'm kind of happy that I didn't hear them. But I actually did hear Merrill and Mike at the end, and actually heard their montage of their play call of the calling. And I wish you know they were on the bar. Stereo system there. Players wise, anyone stand out for you for the Eagles on offense? We'll start on offense first.
Alshon in the first half was just beast like. And obviously, Nick. I'm going to go though, the offensive line kept Nick clean throughout most of the
game.
Did they even had a sack? Exactly. I was like, I felt like Brady, like we didn't get too Brady in terms of an actual sack, but I felt like we were hitting him a lot more, especially in the first half than we were in the second half. But like, I didn't feel that at all with Nick. He sidestepped some pressure a few times. I think the only bad play Nick had, and it's not even his fault, was that weird like third down attempt. No, that's not his fault at all. That like Alshon had that catch. It was just a great play by I forget who was in the secondary for the Patriots to knock it out of
might have been Alshon's Gilmore, hands. And then Daron Harmon made the pick.
Yeah, and then he was, and Alshon was being mauled on that play as well. So he was being mauled. He caught it. A second Patriot guy knocked it out of his hands, and then a third Patriot guy caught it. So I was just like, yeah, congrats. Like, Nick's only interception was because his receivers were getting fouled, and it was a triple team, and it was like a third guy had to catch a deflection. So that wasn't that big. But my point, you remember, it was like kind of a reverse. It was a fake reverse, and then they threw it out to Nelson, and they stuffed it. I was like, that was – it was almost –
Oh, yeah, I remember that. That was a little confusing on the
That was the only bad – and I thought, like, if they just did a regular one or, like, ran the ball because they were getting 4 or 5 yards each time they ran the ball, we would have just got it that first. But I was like, that was the only two – bad plays for Nick. One wasn't his fault. There's and the other one was also not his fault. That, you know, that was just the play called in. So, I think the offensive line.
I definitely agree.
Offensive line. I think that they were just masterful that game, you know, gave him the time that he needed.
I know that most of these guys have never played in a Super Bowl. Aguilar hasn't played, and he had a hell of a game. Even though he didn't score a touchdown, Alshon had a hell of a game.
That was great.
Zach Ertz had a hell of a game, but Corey freaking Clement.
Oh, Corey.
You talk about a guy that stepped up in the biggest stage and not having that much experience, where he's from undrafted free agent, and for some reason a lot of teams passed on him, and I was so happy that we got him off of, right after the draft. four catches, 100 yards, and that big touchdown on third down, and he kept his feet in, and he kept the ball. By the way, that was a catch. That was definitely a catch.
That was the first one.
That it wasn't because like, he was moving the ball. He was moving his hand.
I was talking. I was just like, first off, he caught it. He caught it, but Chris, as a receiver, you should know what that what a catch it looks like. I was like, and three, they were like, oh, his foot stepped out of bounds. Yeah, the third step, his fourth step, really, because his other foot was dragging. You know, his left leg was like he was dragging it on the carpet. So I was just like, so his fourth step maybe had touched out of bounds, but he had already completed the catch before that period. So I was just like, that was like cool. It was infuriating because it was set up to, especially that very first one, it was set up that the Patriots, like, this is what happens when the Patriots win. You know, they'll get a call, and but it went the other way. It was amazing.
Yeah, I mean, his third down magic worked again, and it was unbelievable that he was able to get that touchdown. And he's been a really good player, and I think you're going to have Sproles back. You're going to have Ajayi, probably. You're going to have Blunt, possibly. So you're going to have four backs. And he's, I think, Clement, originally in training camp, when I was at training camp, I think they saw Donnell Pumphrey as the guy that would be Darren Sproles' replacement. He still has another year, and he'll have to play some in the preseason. But Corey Clement's looking like that guy that could be used as Darren Sproles' replacement, and wow, you have another weapon that you just picked off the street. Defensively, I think it's a no-brainer with Brandon Graham, who was the best defensive player, because that one play when you needed to stop, and I said we need a stop here with Tom Brady, and you get that stop in the second play of the drive, and it's a strip sack. Barnett recovers, who was ironically traded his pick, the first-round pick, and a fourth, which we got from Ajayi, was traded for Sam Bradford to the Vikings, whose home stadium we played in the Super Bowl, came up big in the biggest of stages. It's so sweet.
I am with you. I thought maybe a little bit Malcolm Jenkins has a couple of great plays, but Graham was... Graham strip and you know, his play at the beginning of in the first half, like you can kind of see a little bit of a shift in the second half, and I think it was partly because Graham was admitted that he was playing through a hamstring strain. So like you saw him getting worked out, and I was like, that's kind of when like the pressure on Brady like wasn't as great. So I was happy when he came through with that sack. It was just beautiful day. Beautiful day, Ryan. Chris, sorry.
My God. It's still weird because I watched the... you probably have seen the Nick Foles Disney World commercial. And I'm just...
He looks like a Disney prince. They couldn't have sounded better after the game. They could not have sounded like him, Doug. It was just great.
And I'm watching the commercial. I've watched it at least 10 times, whether it's on like Twitter or the actual Disney stream of him at the parade or TV. And I'm thinking like, what's more crazier? The fact that we won the Super Bowl, or this guy's our freaking Super Bowl MVP. Like, where everyone has come from, you know, I've been at training camp, and Nick Foles was almost, he's being talked about, maybe is he going to be staying on the team, because he didn't really play in the preseason. It was all Matt McGloin and some other guy, I forget, it was Dane Evans, who I remember from Tulsa. Nick Foles didn't really play, and we were like, all right, when are we going to see Nick Foles suit up? And I think it was the final preseason game he might have played, and he played in a little bit, and he wasn't that good. And then we get him out with, early on, I believe against the Niners, or against some team, might have been the Niners, and he struggled a couple plays in, and he fumbled a handoff, and it was like, oh no, we don't have a good backup, and we're going to be bad if Wentz goes down. And all of a sudden, you know, Wentz goes down, and Foles leads us to a pretty good drive to lead for a field goal, and then he wins the Super Bowl MVP over Tom Brady. I mean, that's an unbelievable story right there.
It was all unbelievable. It was a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful moment in time. February 4th will go down as one of the greatest days in American history, I think.
Absolutely. And then Howie Roseman, the guy that was in exile from Chip Kelly, who we'll thank him just for the RPOs, who was in NFL Siberia for 2 years when Chip Kelly came. He was back. He got a Jai thanks to the Miami practices.
So we should also make sure to shout out Douglas.
Oh, definitely. Joe Douglas.
Joe Douglas. Oh, my God. We cannot let that back. Give him everything. Give him a fake title, like assistant.
He declined an interview with the Texans because he wants to stay here.
Look at that. That's loyalty. Because we're going on that run. We're about to win one of those, like, 3 out of 4 Super Bowls. Nick Foles. That's why I say we just ride out Nick Foles. But just kidding. We'll worry about the QB stuff later. But I'm just a great. Just feeling great.
Blunt has another ring. Ajayi has a ring. So much for those bad knees. Alshon, who was right on his prediction last year, our team's going to win a Super Bowl next year. He didn't say which team, and he was right. Ertz has a Super Bowl ring to go with his wife's World Cup or whatever championship she's won. Torrey Smith has another ring. Derek Barnett has a ring. Brent Celek has a ring. Good for him. Great to see him get a ring.
Jason Peters, everyone that got Peters, hurt this season.
Peters, Maragos, Wentz, Sproles especially. And I think he's going to come back for another year, which is a really good sign to see. Sturgis, even, he has a ring. Mm-hmm. He was good for 1 week, and then he got hurt. And then you get Jake Elliott, who was our baby.
Rookie, didn't he hit the rookie record? Longest rookie kick.
Oh, Hicks, by the way. Yeah, Jordan Hicks. Jordan Hicks was hurt for the year, too. And then, because I'm looking at stats, and Nigel Bradham played really freaking, him and Michael, the preseason MVP, Michael Kendricks, who wanted out of this city because he wasn't getting any much playing time. And now you get him in more playing time, and he's been a very good role without Hicks. And Bradham especially stepped up his game, especially against Carolina when Hicks was out for a quarter. That was his breakout game. Curry won a Super Bowl ring with the team he was chairing when he was a young kid. Patrick Robinson, that's another great story. He was almost going to get cut. He'd had a really bad training camp, and all of a sudden he's their top slot corner, and he found a home, and he picked 6 against the Vikings 2 weeks ago. That was a nice experience. Brian Braman, did you hear Brian Braman's pregame talk?
No.
Oh, you have to hear it. That was Dawkins-esque. Mm. He just went wild, kill, maim, destroy, and then he had that big tackle right after the kickoff. After the Ertz touchdown, that helped set the mood. That was a turning point. That was another big point, too. Barner, we picked off off the street because of Sproles. He had a pretty good game as a kick returner for the year. Elliott, Donnie Longball Jones, one punt for 41 yards. And then, by the way, got to give some props to, I know he was there for training camp, and then he got traded to New Orleans, and that's where they found out he needed surgery. John Dorenbos, he's getting a ring, and that is the classy, and that's the right move you had to do.
How many diamonds do you think Lori's going to put in this? Like, off 100?
Well, the Patriots put in 283 for their Super Bowl win last year, so I don't know how many, 2018?
Oh, that'd be great.
Just the whole ring covered in diamonds? I don't know.
You come for the parade?
Yes, I will be there at the parade. I'm not sure what I'm doing yet. I think we're going to go with some LaSalle buds. But I know it's supposed to snow here up here on Wednesday, so my commute might be a little tricky. But we actually have practice for Binghamton Saturday. Well, we play Binghamton Saturday. We practice from Tuesday through Friday, and we're supposed to be testing out an iPad system Thursday, and they need me there. And I'm like, Super Bowl parade is more important than an iPad testing which we haven't really gone with yet. So priorities are straight. Eagles parade Thursday. Yeah, baby. I can't wait. I still can't believe we're Super Bowl champions.
Absolutely.
It's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing. And I was just so happy with all the non-Eagle fans just watching me at the bar, just like looking at me like I'm weird. Yeah, exactly. Let them hate.
You know that scene where Joker was like, you have nothing to threaten me with? That's how I feel at all the negativity. I was like, first off, I thought we did a classy job of keeping a lot of the pro Philly stuff off of the main account on Twitter. You know, there's just a few tweets, but we didn't go overboard. That was our reaching out to everybody and say, hey, we're not going to change. We're going to be the same guys, you and I, Chris, even though now we're Super Bowl champion, the residents of a city with the most recent Super Bowl championship. So, you know, this is not going to be like the Patriots era. We're going to be benevolent, you know, overlords of the National Football League. So, you know, people are going to love us. So, if they don't, we don't care.
Well, I can't wait for the parade. Apparently, they're saying 6 million people for the parade.
Yeah, I believe it, dude. Because it's like, first of all, it's Eagles Nation. You know, it's not just Philly. So you got South Jersey. That's like 3 or 4 million people who could potentially come. Delaware. Was that less than a million in Delaware? A couple hundred thousand, maybe, I don't know. But Northern Maryland. Then you have like a lot of the Eastern PA people. Anybody east of like, what did you say, Harrisburg would be Eagles fan. You know, probably. A lot of people in Reading area, a lot of people in Scranton area. Northern Poconos, PA, maybe. I forgot about them. Yeah, we got middle, the mountainous, the ski area.
A lot of my friends from college are going to drive up just for the parade.
A lot of middle in. Jersey. Shout out to Adam. Adam should have joined us when he had a chance. You know, he could have owned this championship with us. But a lot of people in middle Jersey who like just root for whoever's like winning. We're gonna like start to see that. You maybe start to see the map change in Jersey. How many people are Philly fans? You know how it's like kind of divided. They only give Jersey like the 1/3 of South Jersey. You know, maybe getting closer up to half of the state. So. We'll all discuss this. We got to get we'll figure it out. Maybe we will do a follow up pod on this.
We'll do it live at the parade.
Yeah, we got to do a parade video. Somehow we got to find each other at the parade. That was one bad thing about last night. It's just like all of our phones have like Wi-Fi setting, and then you have data/mobile setting. They need like a riot or championship setting, because like no phone, I couldn't make a call. There was just too many people in one area, and that everything, like Twitter was just like, it would just told me, it's like, bro, just check back later. We're not working right now on my phone.
Wow, I wish I was down there. But I was also happy that I'm just sitting back, relaxing, drinking a beer, and just seeing my city burn to the ground because we just won a Super Bowl championship, baby. Wow. Oh. Unbelievable. Final thoughts, Safe.
Just go Birds. That's my only thought, Chris. Go Birds. There's so much joy in the city right now.
Yep. 21 years, when I was a little kid, maybe like 7 or 8, I saw Kerry Collins throw a fade to Jeremy Shockey, and he caught it against the Eagles, and I think he was for the division. And then I remember Shockey shaking his head, saying no to whoever the corner it was or safety was against him. And I wanted to be like, I'm a Giants fan now, I don't want to be an Eagles fan because I hate the losing. And then my parents were like, no, you can't be a Giants fan. You have to just love your heart. And the next day I was back an Eagles fan. But I would have never thought in 21 years this would happen. And I'm honored to be actually have covered this team for training camp and 2 preseason games and understand like how this team is a functional team and how everyone has gotten on board, that we all we got, we all we need mentality. great character all around. There's no problems. You know, there was this one problem that was rumored that, you know, Jim Schwartz was trying to get Doug Peterson's job as head coach and overthrow him, and that never ever happened, and Doug was their guy. But, you know, I saw a Phillies parade in 08, and I saw Mike Levin on Twitter say, like, you know, it's nice to see that we won a Super Bowl. It wasn't against the Tampa Bay Rays where you have to put an asterisk against, because it wasn't really a solid team that we were facing against. Villanova won it, but it's more like, you know, a regional thing. But this brought the whole city together, and we felt confident that we beat the second best team in the National Football League because we're the best team in the National Football League. You know, it's something I never got. I thought, looking at my phone, buying a shirt and buying a hat off of Fanatics saying Super Bowl 52 champion Philadelphia Eagles. It's still weird to say, and I'm not sure how long it'll take for me to realize it's going to sink in. But 21 years, and for others it might have been a longer time. I know a lot of people were alive in 1960. My dad was 3 years old when they won in 1960. But that's a different era. This is not like what it is today. Everyone's first Super Bowl. Forever living, if you're dead, or you were just born yesterday, congratulations, you have won a Super Bowl championship. And I love my city. And I know some of the things we did last night were bad, but climbing up poles and, you know, shouting E-A-G-L-E-S Eagles, climbing up the gates at City Hall might have been bad, might have been scary. But this was a time to celebrate. And 6 million people, if that's going to be a fact, it sounds like an overblown number. But if there are 6 million people, and it's going to be one of the...
Unlike Boston, we have, you know, close to 2 million people, you know, just in the city. So, like, they're going to bring all their family
and
friends.
And this is an Eagles town. This is an Eagles city. You think of Philadelphia, and that's the first thing in their mind is, we're an Eagles town. So you have everybody that's an Eagles fan right
Brian
on
Howard
Broad
said
Street.
It. He's like, listen, this city went crazy for us in 08. It was a wonderful experience. He's like, with Philly's an Eagles town, like, you'll see something you never saw before if the Eagles ever won. So
yeah.
Everyone else has won except for the Eagles. So.
Yep. Definitely think it was a lot more rowdier this time around than it was in 08, from what I remember.
No, it's fine. I mean, like, I was like, again, not much bad, really, really bad stuff was going down in Midtown. But it was just people were just screaming. There was some people climbing stuff. Like, there's a couple people doing, like, chin-ups on, like, the really high poles. But, like, you know, there wasn't anything, like, riotous. You know, it wasn't like Vancouver after they lost or anything
that
like that.
Hilarious. Although UMass students tried to riot, and that was kind of stupid because they're UMass students.
You don't really, you know, in my opinion, like, you don't really riot in, like, Philly and New York. Like, things cost too much money, you know? Like, there's too many cops around here, you know.
We'll just sit around and just drink beer and sulk. But when we win, it's like, let's just go out and, like, let's just party and drink and not sulk. And that's perfect, and I'm happy that what we did on Sunday night was well-deserved. It was,
we did,
I don't know
it.
How long in the making, 58 years in the making since the last NFL championship, and I'm pretty sure when they won in 1960 that it wasn't like a huge celebration like we had last night.
Nope.
We're going to have a fun Thursday. I still can't believe it. I'm just staring in space just thinking about what's going to happen Thursday.
It's great. Like, seriously, Broad's like half a block from my house. Like, you know, it's going to be cool how many people are going to be here and what time and stuff like that. I mean, people are going to be in the city by like 8 o'clock, even earlier.
Maybe earlier. Wow. So.
It's going reverse, right? It's going to end at Art Museum.
It's going to go from Broad and Patterson up to the Art Museum. And I think they did that because there's going to be a lot more people. So they're going to accommodate more people at the art museum. They're going to end there.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, I think, is a good idea. Which they should.
Because that's what it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be the victory parade area.
Yeah. Where they started the season at the draft at the art museum. They'll finish the season at the Art Museum. What a way to end a 2017 Philadelphia Eagles Super Bowl champion season, baby.
Before we go, like, I got to talk to you. That video I sent you, right, of the band?
Yeah.
That was amazing. Because, like, I heard the EAGL, like, we were closer to City Hall by that point. Like, I live in that area, Merriam Theater, and, like, you could hear it on the other end. Like, it was that loud. Like, it just started like a wave, you know, the everyone started cheering. It was, I'm sharing it in our post for this, but it was an amazing moment.
And we're going to have some more amazing moments on Thursday. So we're going to stop right here. We'll have the bigger crosscast with actual lacrosse news tomorrow. Make sure
we have some lacrosse.
We'll have some more lacrosse there as well. And
we cut our Super Bowl episode with some lacrosse, you know, just for everybody.
Indeed. So to all the people that said, you know, we would never be doing any lacrosse stuff again, well, guess what? We did lacrosse stuff. So
you had a prospectus up today.
Indeed.
The work that it doesn't stop here. It's 365 days a year lacrosse on College Cross.
So you can follow Safe. Where can you follow? Where can people follow you, by the way?
I am at Erie_Barrister.
You can follow me at CF Jastrzemski. You can follow the big boy College Cross at College_Cross. Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Instagram. And subscribe on Podomatic, iTunes, wherever you get your podcasts. That's about it for now. We'll join you again for more lacrosse tomorrow on another edition of College Crosscast. If you like the Eagles, congratulations. You're a Super Bowl champion. If you're not, then stay hydrated.
Amen. Take care.